I'm going to talk to you today about the Terri Schiavo case. If I were to ask you to raise your hand, just about every person here would say, yes, Mr. Gibbs, I heard about that. And it was an interesting case because, I mean, think about this in your lifetime. What issue have you ever seen Rush Limbaugh and Jesse Jackson agree upon? And you know what? I can't think of another one. Mr. Limbaugh proudly proclaims himself to be conservative, Mr. Jackson on the left, and they have completely divergent viewpoints. But for a period of time in early 2005, both of those men said Terri Schiavo's life should be protected. It started out as kind of the biggest legal news story, but then in early 2005 it grew and it became the biggest domestic news story. And then for about the 4 to 5 weeks ahead of Terri's death on March the 31st of this year, it became worldwide the biggest story around the globe. And the whole world wanted to focus and try to understand what was going on in this case. Not a continent, not a country that did not have some form of coverage. And as you look back, and you're sitting here almost in the tail end of 2005, when people write the history books or do the year in review, they'll clearly say that among the top stories of 2005, you'd have the hurricanes, you'd have the events in Iraq, but clearly the life, and then as you know, the death of Terri Schiavo will be something that marks this year and in a measure marks all our lives. And you say, well, David, it was so covered. It was so looked at. It was so reviewed. And yet it's so confused. So many people look at this and they're not quite sure how to put it in perspective. And I had kind of a unique vantage point. I had the privilege of being the lawyer for the parents, the mom and dad, that wanted to keep her alive. But I was allowed in the room with Terri. I got to do something that the media wasn't allowed to do. I got something that the courts refused to do. I actually got to go in and meet Terri Schiavo. And let me just for a minute walk you into that experience, because there's a lot of people that would say, well, David, she's brain dead. She's gone. We should have just let her go. Be careful. Terri Schiavo was as alive as any person sitting in this room. She went to bed at night. She woke up in the morning. Her heart, her lungs, her internal organs functioned just perfectly. As you look at the Terri Schiavo case, you'll agree with me that if someone's brain dead, it doesn't make any sense to keep them alive. I mean, we understand the insanity. This beautiful auditorium would not have this happen, but if something were to fall and strike you in the head and all of a sudden your brain is destroyed, your head is destroyed, well, we have machines. We could rush out and get a ventilator. We could rush out and get a heart machine. And we could strap machines to your body. And even though you were dead, your head was gone, we could actually keep your corpse still breathing. We could keep your corpse still functioning. And you'd sit here and say, Mr. Gibbs, that's silly. Why would you do that? And you're absolutely right. When someone's dead, when God's decided their time has come, to put machinery or artificial apparatus on a corpse makes no sense. Terri Schiavo was not a corpse. She was absolutely alive. You say, well, but she needed some degree of life support. Here was all she needed. As a result of a brain injury, she in 1990, as a 26-year-old girl, had a temporary deprivation of oxygen and blood flow to her brain. So what happened is that created the disability. And her arms would not work as well as they once did. You have arms that you can, most of you, I would presume, manipulate. You can control. You can pick things up. You could take a fork and put food to your own mouth. Terri's arms didn't do that. Her arms worked a little bit. She could tug at a blanket. She could hold an animal. She could do certain things with her arms, but they were not in a position where she could reach down, pick things up, and eat it herself. So that created two options to feed her. Number one would be you'd feed her by mouth. You'd take food and water, and another person would assist her in eating it. But the problem with that is it's slow and it's time-consuming. When you have to feed another person, if you've ever done that even with a little baby, it's hard to do. And then medically, there's always some risks to it, because if an individual is being fed, if they don't swallow it correctly, it can go into their lungs, it's not as safe. And so what the doctors many years ago decided to do was they were going to give her a feeding tube. What that is a little port in your stomach. It's real small, and they hook up to it a couple times a day and provide nourishment into the system. Terry Schiavo's only life support was food and water. Let me ask you a question. How many of you here need food and water? May I see your hand, please? How many of you worry about eating too much food? I mean, that's really our problem. But Terry Schiavo was receiving just food and water. First time I met her, I'm walking into the room and I'm anticipating a very sick young lady. I mean, I'd read some of the papers and some of the things, and when the parents came to us, their case was already lost, had been lost on appeal. It was really in a very difficult state, but I wanted to go see Terry. And I walked into the room expecting an emergency room scene. I don't know why. I just thought, you know, there'll be monitors, there'll be beepers, there'll be healthcare people. I mean, she's sick. You know, I'm thinking it's going to look very, very medical and kind of urgent. Walk in the room, Terry's in there all by herself, sitting in a lazy boy chair. That was surprise number one. Nothing's hooked up to her. It wasn't. She only was fed a couple times a day, again, like you and I would eat. And so nothing is hooked up to her at all, sitting there in the chair. Now, I'd heard, well, you know, people say that her brain is gone, she's a vegetable, she's non-responsive. I walk in the room with her mom and dad. At the sight of her mother, Terry literally squeals and gets all excited and almost starts kind of like jumping in the chair. I thought, my goodness, how she's recognizing the different people. Now, how many understand there's a bond between a mother and a daughter? And I really believe, just from watching it, that it was this bond that gave Terry a lot of the strength to go through what she underwent. And Mary walked up to her and kind of did what she generally did. She went up by Terry and she kissed her on the cheek and she said, Terry, we're here to see you, honey. Sure love you. This is Mommy. I've got some guests to introduce. And as she's kissing Terry on the cheek, Terry flips her head around and starts to kiss her mom back. Now, her kisses were not pursed up completely like yours might be, but kind of like almost like nibbling on her jaw. Terry turns her mouth and kind of nibbles back on her mom. Mary says, now please understand, Mary Schindler, just so you're aware, no medical training. She's just a stay-at-home mom, a regular lady in her early 60s, never thought she'd be in this situation. She said, Terry, I want to show you for Mr. Gibbs here what you can do. Would you say I love you for Mr. Gibbs? And I thought, no, this girl is really sick. It's kind of amazing she's recognizing people and acting happy. And Mary's rubbing her on the cheeks. She said, okay, come on, honey, let's show Mr. Gibbs. Let's say I. And after Mary instructs her to say I, Terry responds, ah. I thought, boy, that's kind of remarkable. Mary says, that's good, Terry. Now let's say love. And Terry got the L. Wah! Right back at her mom. Looks up, wants the approval, clearly wants to please her mother, clearly trying very hard. She says, okay, Terry, what I want you to do now is say you. And Terry never got the use. Never saw her do it. And Mary said, oh, Terry, that's good. That's a tough sound. Let's start again. She'd say, let's say I. And boy, ah, la. I watched this dozens of times. I thought, this girl is obeying basic commands. Now, is she brain injured? No question. I hope and pray. I look around this room and you look young and you look like you're in good health. And I hope and pray every person here has length of days and good health. I hope nobody here ever has a disability or an injury like what Terry Schiavo had to undergo. But I'm watching a woman that is very much alive. The responses for different people were different. Her dad, he had a mustache, a little bit crustier personality, kind of sometimes had a little bit of a beard on his chin. He didn't always shave it as clean. And he'd come in and say, "Okay, honey, this is your daddy." And he'd kind of had a little routine. He was from Philadelphia. And he'd say, "Now, honey, I'm going to give you a kiss. This is your daddy coming in for a kiss." And he would do that every single time. Terry Schiavo would purse up and make what they called the lemon face, turn her head away and giggle like she was going to avoid her dad's kiss. Sit there in the room, and Mary says, "I'm going to go outside a minute. I'll be right back." You're still there. Mary leaves. Terry starts to cry. Tears you can see. Just about every time her mom came in, squeal all excited. Just about every time her mom left, tears and sadness. Like the radio. She'd sit there and listen to the radio in her room. Now, she was into classical music. Probably in her brain-injured state, that was soothing. It was predominantly instrumental. It was probably somewhat relaxing and comforting in her room. But sometimes the staff would come in. Now, these were people tasked with cleaning the room or checking on her. And, you know, they're thinking she's a vegetable, so we can do whatever we want. And so they'd flip the radio dial. They'd go to something more contemporary or different or music that they wanted to listen to, and they'd start in the room. Terry Schiavo would fuss at them till they'd put the station back. She would routinely ask for pain pills. During, for example, like a cold weather snap, which we don't have quite this cold down in Florida, but hay fever, other things, she'd feel uncomfortable. She would fuss and squawk at people in the room for Tylenol. Now, brain injured, not a question, but very much alive. You say, "Well, Mr. Gibbs, I understand that, but, I mean, clearly she didn't want to live." Well, be real careful with that as well. Because this case hung on really two things: Terry's medical condition, and I've already told you she was far more advanced than was ever allowed to be put forward into the media. I know many of you were probably even haunted by the images of her with the balloon or other things. But what were Terry's real wishes? This case has a funny timeline. She collapsed at age 26 in 1990. At that point, her husband said, "Do everything you can. Let's keep her alive." And boy, they rushed into a lot of help for Terry. He even proceeded to sue doctors, got some doctors to be awarded to him $2 million. Now, how many think that's a lot of money? How many would like to have that to shop at Christmas time? And all of a sudden, the money came in 1993, and this is an interesting little moment in all of this. All of a sudden, at that point, he remembers Terry Schiavo didn't really want to live. Now, the family at this point is aghast. The mom and dad were thrilled. They thought, "Wow, I mean, there might be money to help save our daughter and give her greater health and rehab and things to help her do better." And at this point, the husband, who just told a malpractice jury, remember, a mom and dad watched him promise, "I'll take care of her for the rest of her life. That's why I need the money." All of a sudden now, he says she doesn't want to live, and he took the money dedicated for her care and used it to hire lawyers to begin to have her life ended. The family, people say, it always shocked me the family couldn't get along, that there wasn't a way to work. This is where the rift settled in. And at this point, the family said, "You can't do this to our daughter." Over the years, it worked its way to a trial in the year 2000. I didn't do this trial, wasn't even aware of this trial. But a judge in the year 2000 said, "No, the husband's the guardian. He can take away the food and water. He can kill her." And you say, how would a judge do that? I don't know. The one thing I do know, looking back at the record, the judge never went to see Terry. Now, how many of you think she'd be a pretty important witness in a case like this? I mean, if he'd have seen her with her mother or anything like that, I think it would have influenced. And Terry never came to court. She was never in the courtroom. So the people that decided her life and her death never went to see her. The family battled these appeals. The year is 2003. All the appeals are lost. Terry is set to die. They walk into my office. Now, if any of you are studying law, you'll understand what a messed up case looks like. These are a family that's already lost their case. Lots of lawyers have worked on it. There's no hope. There's no appeals. And they have no money. And so when you look at this situation, you'd say it's pretty much hopeless. And I remember Bob Schindler looking at me and saying, David, is there anything, we're not holding out any false hope, is there anything that can be done? I said, Bob, legally, this looks really like a mess. But I'll tell you something, we're willing to try. Because I believe we serve a God who can do the impossible. How many believe we serve that kind of God? And we watched God do some incredible things. We contacted the Florida legislature, and some friends in that legislature said, we'll try to get a law passed. And wonderfully, Terry's Law, as it would later became known, was passed by the Florida legislature. We thought we had our miracle. It looked like Terry was going to remain alive. You kind of know what happened in the story. That law was struck down in late 2004, early 2005. It was the rush through the courts that many of you watched in the news. March of 2005, the court said, we will hear no more. Mr. Gibbs, we realize all your arguments have been raised, but that original 2000 death order, it will be enforced, and Terry was set to die. The United States Congress entered the picture. Congressmen started calling me on the phone saying, is there anything we can do? And it was a very unique situation. They were in recess. They came back over Palm Sunday. Talked with hundreds of them. They had a very, very, I think, noble perspective. I realize politically the polls and other things have been very hard on them. But many of these congressmen and senators and their staff said to me, we could get politically killed over this, but we're willing to do it because we believe it's the right thing to do. How many appreciate it when our elected leaders do the right thing, even for one woman who can't even vote? You saw the law that was passed, and we were in federal court with what we hoped would be Terry's second miracle. Just got a phone call from the American Bar Association. They notified me that our case set a record. You say, how so, Mr. Gibbs? We have the only case in American history that went through the entire federal court system to the Supreme Court and back twice in 10 days. They said, we do not think that record will be broken anytime soon. Again, those of you that are familiar with law, you understand just how any one of these courts could have frozen it. But it was sort of like a hot potato. It moved. You know the end of the story. They said, no, we're not going to overturn that state court judge back in 2000. What the Congress did, what the president did, was basically deemed a nullity. And Terry Schiavo, as many of you know, stepped into eternity on March the 31st of this year, just a few short hours after her final Supreme Court appeal had been denied. You say, well, Mr. Gibbs, I know it's kind of sad, probably tough for the family, but, you know, I heard on the news that, you know, when you're in this kind of state, you know, death by dehydration, it's just sort of a passing. It's not really that big a deal. I was in the room with Terry the last time her mother would see her alive. Now, just to put a perspective on it, Mary said to me, David, would you walk over? This is about 11 o'clock at night, midnight. This was one of these times where between Starbucks and no sleep, you just went pretty much 24 hours a day. I said, sure, Mary, I'll walk over with you. And what that meant was the media was in horde format. I mean, you would step anything we did. Our cars were followed because it was news. So we step out, it's a sea of media, and then the police break them out. Then it's a sea of protesters. They're there, hundreds of them, 24 hours a day. Now we're into the facility. We go through police checks like you wouldn't believe. Everything's out of your pockets. Every inch of your body is touched. Then you're checked again. Then you're allowed in the room with an armed police officer at all times. And as Mary and I make our way into the room, Terry's breathing has flipped. Now, those of you that understand medicine, you'll recognize that the human body, when you breathe, kind of has a natural in and out. But when death is rapidly approaching, oftentimes you move into what they call the death pant. It sounds gaspy, like you're fighting for the air, or like an animal on a hot day when they've overexerted themselves. It's a panting. And Terry's breathing is loud and panty when you walk in the room. That was the first thing that caught my attention. Then as I looked over at her in the bed, I was aghast. The blankets were up to her neck. She still had her animal, but her face looked terrible. All the water, all the color, all the hydration was pulled out. If you were to take a skeleton and just stretch the skin and pull it tight, and every little crevice in her jawbone, everything in her cheek, it's like exposed through this what looks like paper-thin skin. Under her eyes, all the way to her nose, is all black and sunken. It looks like you took your fist and punched her because it's just so dark. Again, without the water, the body's turning in on itself. Her skin is all splotched and dry. They tried to put some moisturizer on her, but she looked sunburned. I'd seen dry lips before. I'd never seen a dry tongue. I'd never seen a dry roof of a mouth. And when you literally see the skin peeling from lack of hydration, Mary went up to her daughter like she would do, started to kiss her daughter on the cheek. One of the heartaches of this case was no mom and dad should ever have to live through what these people went through. As she started to talk, it was an unbelievable mix of just half prayer and half conversation with Terry. Terry, don't fight it. It's okay, honey. You'll be with Jesus soon. It's all right. And then she'd flip and be, oh God, please don't let her feel this. Be with our daughter. Please help her. You begin to watch a mom cry. Her tears are now running down the dry skin of her daughter. And I really didn't expect Terry to do anything. She's on heavy morphine. It's interesting that you have to give a vegetable morphine. And they don't want her to feel what will be the death. The explosion of the heart is what happens with dehydration. I really didn't think Terry would respond. To my surprise, Terry started up in her bed, flips her head just a little bit over to her mom, begins to move her mouth as she would in a very weakened state, try to kiss her jaw on her mom. This was the only time, and I'm not quite sure how she did it, but one or two little tears starts to run out of Terry's cheeks. It's the only time I saw her cry when her mom walked in the room. You stand there and you get some images in your mind that will never go away. 20 or 30 minutes, I'm not quite sure how long, went by, and we went out in the hallway. Mary was ready to go. She would never go back. She said, David, it's just too hard. I can't see my girl like that. In the hallway, she said, David, I'm no lawyer, and I'm no doctor. But she said, what I don't understand is why do they have to kill my little girl? I said, Mary, I am a lawyer, and I'm no doctor. And it doesn't make any sense. And folks, as you look at the Terry Schiavo case, when you got a mom, when you got a dad willing to take care of their girl, putting her to death in a barbaric and a savage manner really doesn't make any sense. Can I give you three very quick thoughts and then we'll be done? How many believe we need to protect and defend life? Life is a gift from God. And if God allows a disability into your life, how many believe there's still purpose to each and every life? Number two, people like Terry matter to God. It's a verse, you don't turn there, but in Matthew 25, verse 40, God says, when you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me, God himself. Wow. I knew Terry would never have a job. I knew Terry, probably absent a miracle, would never be able to say, thank you, Mr. Gibbs. But can I tell you something? I believe Terry mattered to God. And I think as Christian people, and I commend you as young people at this outstanding college and institution, university, make sure that you don't just run to the beautiful people. Make sure you don't just run to the people who can do for you. Make sure you have God's heart for the least of these. And then number three, my final comment. This case hung on Terry's life, her wishes, her quality of life. But it was sort of like eternity got missed in the mix. Larry King, on the day of Terry's death, did a 3-hour live special. I said, Mr. Gibbs, would you come on? I said, sure. And he hit me with a question. He said, David, you fought for Terry to live and she's now dead. What do you want us to think about now as all these families, millions of people around the globe, are trying to deal with this issue? I said, Larry, Terry's case dealt with her life and whether she should remain alive, and we fought for her life, but she's now in eternity. And I think every family, every person needs to ask themselves this question. Are they ready for the eternity to come? And you know what Larry King said? He said, David, that's an amazingly profound and very deep question. And he said, we're going to get back to that right after commercial. And you know what? We never got back to it. Because the world wants to live like what's down here, that's all there is. But how many understand it's real important for every person, whether healthy or disabled, to make sure they're ready for the eternity to come? I was proud to stand up for Terry Schiavo's life. I'd be proud to stand up and fight for your innocent life. But my hope and prayer, and why I thank Dr. Brown and the others for their grace and allowing me to be here, is I hope we don't miss the lessons God intended for our nation from this case. I think you've just watched the Roe versus Wade. That was the abortion case of 1973. I think you've just watched the Roe v. Wade of our generation. And the question, will we stand up like our founding fathers did, like the God of the Bible says we should? Will we stand up for innocent life? Will we stand up for the least of these? Will we live in light of eternity? Every head bowed and every eye closed. Father, I thank you for this great university. I thank you for these phenomenal young people and the future and the hope and the commitment and love to you that they represent. I thank you for Dr. Brown and his leadership as he has literally gone around the globe and encouraged people to look at things not from a human viewpoint, but from a truly Christian, a truly Bible-based viewpoint. I pray now, Lord, that Terry's death will not be in vain, but that the lessons you have for each of us will be taken to heart, and that together collectively as your people, we'll march forward and indeed have your heart for the least of these. In the name of Jesus, I pray, and all God's people said, Amen.